Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So some craziness, again, when you look at the insanity, you've got the Ted Cruz's going after Big Bird. How do you go after Big Bird? Seriously, how do you attack Big Bird? You've got Paul Gosar, the congressman from Arizona, evidently going through an anime slaying of AOC. And you go, does he need an intervention at this moment? Is there something that we can help him with? And this is we're in this such a weird moment where you look at the vote for infrastructure and you got very few Republicans to come on board. It's almost like they're quite happy to allow the country to take a nosedive, and they're quite happy to let things go south and bring us the most insane kind of topics. Really? Big Bird got vaccinated, so now there's an attack? But I guess this is the world in which we now find ourselves. And I come back to blaming us. I come back to blaming we the people. I come back to blaming the people who are voting for these folks. Because understand, this new Jonathan Karl book that's coming out, for instance, tells the story of how Trump's leaving on January 20th. And it's the weirdest kind of thing in that he's saying he's going to leave the party entirely. It's done. And knows it's going to destroy the Republican Party, and he's okay with that. And personally, I'm actually kind of okay with it too, because this is not the grand old party of Reagan. This is not the grand old party of Eisenhower. This ain't your grandparents' Republican Party by any stretch of the imagination. And here to share some thoughts on, well, just how crazy things and how much things have gone off the rail, I've asked Reed Galen to come talk with us. Reed is the co-founder of the Lincoln Project. What you need to know about Reed is he was a former George W. Bush guy and Republican operative for quite a long time. Now the co-founder of the Lincoln Project, and here to share some thoughts on where things are. Reed, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me.
So, I'm looking at this moment, and I'm looking at Big Bird. I'm looking at Gosar's anime slaying of AOC, and I'm going, what the hell is wrong with the GOP?
Well, I mean, Rick, where do we begin? I think first and foremost, you have to remember that the party that I grew up in, literally grew up in Washington, D.C., at least had some semblance of a governing philosophy. It was supposed to be fiscal responsibility, moral and muscular foreign policy, and some sort of, commitment to individual liberty. Now it is all performative. Now it is all about owning the libs and, inciting culture wars where it can. Why does Paul Gosar do that insane anime? Because he knows there will be outrage. Why does Ted Cruz go after Big Bird? Because he knows there will be outrage. There is no greater good at play. There is nothing better than their own self-aggrandizement, ascension to, and retention of power. That's it.
Now, what do you say to this person who says, Reed, that the Democrats do the same thing? This is what our political system sadly has turned into, and there's no hope for democracy left.
Well, I would say this is that, politics is a tough business, as you know. And going back to the beginning of the Republic, right, this American politics has always been a very bare-knuckle sport. But when it came to governing, at least in modern times, most of the time the parties did what was supposed to be done. You think about it, it was now 50 some years ago, that Republicans and Democrats came together for the Civil Rights Act, for the Voting Rights Act. In the 1980s, nobody wants to admit this as Republicans, Reagan slashed taxes as soon as he got to office, realized he'd cut too much, spent too much on the military, and raised taxes again. Right. He might have been a supply sider, in a campaign, right, where trickle down economics and all that other silliness. But he understood that, like, the government needed money to run, and he didn't want to run into deficits and all that. And now what we see is that there's only two parties in this country, as you know, and only one of them is committed to any sort of small D democratic principles, and that's the big D Democratic Party.
Yeah. And on the Reagan front, he also did something on immigration that we can't seem to get anything done with on this day either.
But Rick, remember, it wasn't just on immigration, it was an amnesty. Anybody who was in the country was allowed to stay, right? Like, this was not some grand policy thing. It was a blanket action on his part that, you know, as you know, my guess is that if you held Reagan up as anything other than a mythological figure to most Republicans nowadays, they would decry his actions.
Yeah, no, I've said that he's unrecognizable in today's Republican Party. And I've had Republicans tell me, no, no. And I say, well, I lived through that era. I do remember him. I wasn't a huge fan, but he wasn't this. I don't think he was someone who would have defended an insurrection to overthrow our ballot box. I got to think he wouldn't go that far.
Well, let's say this. One, he would never have incited it. And two, I would venture to say that Tip O'Neill, who was then Speaker of the House, never for a million years would have stood up for an Article 2 branch attack on the Article 1 branch, right? It just would never have happened because no one could imagine. Now, you know, Rick, if there's one thing we really have to get through all our heads is that every day when you say it couldn't get worse, it can get worse. Our biggest threat will be a lack of imagination about how willing these people are to do the things that we could never before have conceived of.
Yeah, see, the difference is I've met Steve Bannon. I do believe that there is no depth deep enough. I do believe there is no there's no well deep enough that he won't dive into. There's nothing that he and his ilk won't do. So I got to tell you, I'm prepared for some pretty ugly.
It's going to be ugly. I mean, Bannon is a really good example of the philosophical belief system of the far right conservative movement in this country and the amorality of it. Remember that Steve Bannon is a self-avowed Leninist, not John Lennon, Vladimir Lenin, right? Who said, you know, if you're going to start something new, you have to burn down the administrative state. And those are the words he uses. He wants to take what this country is. He wants to reduce its foundations to rubble and build it up in some unbelievable nihilistic dark vision that he's conceived of. And unfortunately, whether or not it's Donald Trump or a lot of other Republicans, there seem to be a hell of a lot of people who are willing to follow him down that path.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the party today, and you know, I keep coming back to, I blame voters. We voted these people in. These are the choices we're given, and we keep making bad ones. Am I wrong? I mean, at some point, do the Republican voters bear any responsibility in how off the rails the party has gone?
You know, I think it's a yin and a yang. Leadership matters, even bad leadership. And I think it is a natural reaction that some folks in the tumult of the last 20 years between 9/11. You know, a technological revolution, an economic meltdown, you know, 20 years of war, you know, all of the pandemic, all of it, right? We're in a very transitional period in history. It does bother me, though, and I say this to a lot of people who I used to consider friends, that so many of them would go along with all of the ugliness and truly bad things for, you know, conservative judges and tax cuts.
Now, today there were a number of names listed for subpoenas. The January 6th commission has come out with a bunch of names. William Stepien, Jason Miller, John Eastman, Michael Flynn, Angela McCollum, and Bernie Kerik. Do these people ever see the inside of a hearing room? I mean, you know, I have some hope, maybe, possibly. But do they ever see anything? Because this whole process is taking way too long, in my view. And what's happened is I think the Republican echo chamber and their media machine has almost rewritten the narrative already to turn those people on January 6th into heroes and martyrs when I see them as criminals and insurrectionists.
I think a lot of it depends on whether or not the Justice Department ultimately issues, a subpoena and orders Steve Bannon to appear or be jailed. I think that there's a lot of folks on that list who have no fear of ever being really brought to justice for anything. You have somebody like a Bill Stepien who came within a razor's you know, breadth of going to federal prison for the stuff that he did when he worked for Chris Christie in New Jersey and Bridgegate and all that. My guess is that maybe he's someone who would flip because he's already come that close. And my guess is he doesn't, you know, he's not Lazarus when it comes to federal prison. He probably doesn't want to take a second shot at it. But I would say that, you know, the Bernie Carricks of the world, these people have gone truly over the line, and they'll, you know, my guess is that they will say, come and get me. And if and when they are, you know, brought in and, you know, perp walked into a federal courthouse, they will be considered martyrs. So justice must be done. These subpoenas must be honored, but we shouldn't be under any illusion that any of them will come quietly.
No, none of them are going to come quietly. I mean, but if it were you, well, if it were me, I know they would come and drag me in there and I wouldn't have a choice. But these are folks who have powerful allies and money behind them.
Yeah, and you mentioned one thing about the Republican media machine, and it really has to be encapsulated into the conservative ecosystem. The media machine is part of it, but there is a lot of money, right? There's a lot of judicial philosophy. There's a lot of policymaking, you know, out of places like the Heritage Foundation, right, which is responsible almost single-handedly for writing a lot of this anti-voting legislation we've seen this year. So it is a very highly organized, well-resourced, well-funded, and dedicated movement. One that I got to be honest with you, Rick, I was telling somebody earlier today, even as a young operative, you know, who was lucky enough to work at the White House in my 20s, I think I was either intentionally unaware or blissfully ignorant that those forces were at work, right? Like, I just didn't understand what was going on. And this is, you know, you don't get to a 6-3 conservative court overnight. That's a 40-year process, right? You don't come up with stuff on like SB 8 in Texas overnight. Somebody spent a lot of time and a lot of resources writing that bill to be as weird and convoluted as it was, so that they thought that it could clear a court challenge. So we should never underestimate that they will continue. They will fight. They will not stop. They will not stop.
No, I mean, there's too much money. The wealth class of this country has bought themselves the best think tanks possible to sit around and dream up bad ideas so that when crisis hits, they are able to take full advantage of it. And this isn't new. I mean, I think most people don't really understand the kind of network, the state policy network of think tanks that are out there producing bad ideas every day, and the kind of wealth that's spent on a microphone to promote those bad ideas. I think most people that I know just think, well, this is natural. It's grassroots organizing. It's just people. The reality is this is well-funded, orchestrated political theater that we're seeing right in front of us.
Yeah. And, you know, you talk about the state level, and, you know, this is one thing that I think we really do need to remember is that, you know, as I talked about, you know, these other conservative organs, you know, there's something called ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. And for decades, they have spent a lot of time, energy, and money on electing Republican legislators to state houses, state houses, state senates, and then, you know, statewide office, whether or not it's Secretary of State, attorneys general, governors. And so what you see now, and this is something David Pepper, former Democratic chair of the Ohio party, said, is that it's basically like pay for play isn't the exception, it's the rule. So all of these Republican legislatures, Ohio, Florida, Texas, Iowa, Louisiana, wherever it is, it's the lobbyists, you know, they do two things. They deliver a bill and then they deliver a check. Or maybe they deliver a check and then they deliver a bill. It doesn't matter. The public outcomes are horrendous. They have no bearing on the lives of people. We've seen that in Kansas, where a Democrat won for governor a couple of years ago because public education funding had been cut so deeply that kids were only going to school 4 days a week. And so we can only hope that as we get into yet another election year, that voters are starting to wake up and say, the Republicans have nothing but fear and, you know, retrograde, you know, social wars to fight as we get into this next fight.
Yeah, and that's where your organization comes in, because I think you guys do some of the best messaging out there. The Lincoln Project, you know, during the Trump years was front and center. You know, what is it that you're focusing on in the coming weeks and months? Because clearly the message war, Democrats are losing badly.
So, I mean, what we do, I mean, look, we're all former Republicans, right? maybe one or two of us have become Democrats, but most of us are independents, and we operate outside, you know, the Democratic, you know, campaign and political superstructure, but generally alongside it, because we believe that the Republican Party must be repudiated by voters in 2022, 2024, probably 26 and 28 as well. So what we do is take a Republican view of the world vis-a-vis politics and how you campaign, which is pretty bare knuckle. You know, we don't pull a lot of punches. You know, we are lucky enough that Republicans do enough bad things now that you don't even need to make up or twist their words or their actions. You just reflect them back to voters. And oftentimes, you know, that's enough. But what we also do in these races, you know, there'll be targeted House races, targeted U.S. Senate races, and targeted governor's races this coming year. You have to change the dynamic of a race, and that's what we do. In 2020, what we learned, and I think you'll see this with a lot of these sort of Trumpy candidates, is we put ourselves between Donald Trump and Joe Biden as the Biden campaign was getting its feet underneath it. We will do that where we want the Republican nominee in a given race to turn toward us and fight us on our terms as the Democrat goes and campaigns on the things that they believe are best for their state, for their district, whatever the case might be, and really make sure that, you know, ultimately, yeah, we get a lot of attention for our ads. But really what we want to do is find those Republicans and those independents who are disaffected during the Trump years, right, who are still up for grabs, right? They're not Democrats by nature, but they hate what the Republican Party has become. Right. And what we want to say to them is, this is not the time to argue about policy. This is the time to worry about democracy and decency. Come with us for this cycle, for this candidate. Let's get over this hill, 24, 26, 28. You know, we can go back to arguing about marginal tax rates and parts per billion of what's in the air.
I look forward to that last question. I got it real quick. Because ultimately, I do want a functional Republican Party. I do think you need to have both. I don't want one that's willing to burn the house down. So this is what you're talking about.
Yeah, look, I mean, the Republican Party will not. There are only two ways that the Republican Party will moderate itself in any real way. One is if and when Donald Trump leaves the scene. And two, if he is defeated again, let's say in a 2024, but again, they are defeated writ large in such a way that even the candidates say, well, we can't win like this anymore.
Yeah, well, let's hope that actually happens. But Reid, I appreciate the time.
Where more moderates can try and come back into the play.
I hope it works. I appreciate the time. Keep up the great work. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again real soon.
Thanks, Rick.
Good stuff. Reid Galen, co-founder of the Lincoln Project. We'll get links out on social media how you can take a look at that. Let's take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.